are in the shackles of tradition. Tradition may and may not be all right. Unfortunately, most of the time it is not. So I repeat, don't follow the gang. Just think. Think. And the title of this, I think, is ideal. So you think you have problems. So I do not crowd this tape. I'm going to continue this on tape number 2 with the next case. This is Dr. Donald S. Reinhardt. Thank you for listening. This is Dr. Donald S. Reinhardt. I will continue recording. So you think you have problems. This is tape number 2. It is recorded at 7.5 on a single side. Case number 7. The case of the gagging trumpet player. This student came to me from a town in western Pennsylvania. I believe he was supervisor of music for the city, and he was in charge of music at several local high schools in the area. His problem was that after the initial attack on repeated tonguings, some days he would actually gag on even the second repeated tonguing. For example, he would make his initial attack, let us say, on 2 quarter notes. The second quarter note, he would start to gag and cough and have to put his trumpet down. Now, he said he had this trouble for years. Therefore, he developed some kind of a freak way of repeating notes, like the Indian language I'm always talking about, the push with the breath or the spasmodic thrust of the wind. And he got his lips so pliable from doing it that way that he actually got some kind of an attack. But he wanted to clear up this problem because it was bothering him on flute, clarinet, sax, trumpet, trombone, and all the rest of the wind instruments. So he'd had this problem since he started. And he never had anyone answer it satisfactorily. So he came to me with the idea of finding out some kind of an answer to his problem. I had seen the gagging before with several brass players, but never to such an extent that would occur on the second note at times. In short, his mouth would become so hypersensitive to touch that some days, he said even the first note used to upset him. Now, oddly enough, over a period of time, this did affect his speech. He would always hesitate to talk loudly, because it would upset him, touching the sides of his mouth or up in the mouth, in the orifice of the mouth, with a tongue. And it was more pronounced with loud speech, so he would avoid talking loudly. So he had a very well-modified voice. Nature's way of getting around problems, I suppose. To make a long story short, I had never seen a case of gagging as pronounced as this one. So I didn't waste any time. I took this gentleman to a well-known ears, eyes, nose, and throat specialist in the city. And I was with him while the doctor examined him. And the doctor said it was one of the most sensitive cases he had ever seen. And that all he could tell him to do was to avoid any form of wind instrument playing and to find some other angle in the occupation where it would not be required to manipulate his tongue to such an extent as would be required for any wind instrument. Well, this broke his heart and spirit, But he admitted that it had been chronic and had gone on for years. And today, this gentleman has a very elevated job, musically speaking, and is still in the Western Pennsylvania area. However, he does not play a wind instrument, owing to the defect of an overly sensitive mouth or mouth membrane. Now, I suppose there are other cases like this, but I have never seen any so pronounced. So this, to me, is a real problem. The doctor said he did not know of any solution, that no solution was known at the present time. So he talked to me and talked to the student in a very serious manner, telling him to find some other outlet for his efforts. And that is what brought on the fact that he pursued a string line of playing rather than brass. But as you know, the punishment has to fit the crime. So I mention this as an unusual case, and not as one that I solved and made him play afterwards, because I didn't. But to me, this would be one reason for giving up a wind instrument. Now, believe me, the reasons are few and far between. There's many cases that are marked off the calendar as failures have turned out to be successes. And frankly, without too much thought, I believe I could name 100 of them, of top-ranked players today who were named failures by certain well-known teachers along the line. We'll call this the case of the gagging trumpet player, in case you would like to refer to it later. Case number 8, a New York studio trombonist who possessed very short arms and a mouthpiece placement far over to his left side, who was suddenly called upon to play sforzando piano, that is bell tones, in the middle and lower part of the second air chamber. Now, in case you do not know, the second air chamber on a trombone is from a fourth line F, chromatically down to and including the seventh position, B natural, that is on a tenor trombone. This is called an air chamber, the second air chamber. Now, in this area, we do get the low D flat in the fifth, the C in the sixth, and the B natural in the seventh. Now, since he was placed to the left side of his mouth and would have to reach for these notes in such a manner that he pulled the mouthpiece from its moorings, so to speak, on the left side of his mouth so he could reach the positions. Well, I admit this is a particular problem, but we were dealing with a fine trombonist. And this gentleman, by the way, played smoke rings over the air for the better part of 11 years. And I believe was the first man to play high F consistently night after night in the old radio days. And after the dance band disbanded, he joined a New York studio or staff orchestra, and that is when he needed the low notes. Up until then, his work was in the high register, and it was not too noticeable. First of all, we had his trombone neck piece bent. It was bent almost a half inch, so that by the time he would put on a tuxedo collar, he could locate his mouthpiece properly on the left side of his mouth without interference from the contact with the collar and the trombone itself. In addition to that, the position of the right hand was changed so that he could maneuver his slide much longer to much longer positions without pulling the mouthpiece over to his right. And then the third thing, of course, was we made him hyper-conscious of the fact of the problem, I should say, And in a very short time, this was cleared up. Now, it made its announcement by undesirable rattles and overtones on the D flat, the C, and the B natural. Notes that in studio playing he required a great deal of. And the reason for the rattle was that in reaching, one side of his lip would be loose from the shift of the pressure of the mouthpiece because of the short arm and because of the placement to the left. Do you have a picture of that? If you'd like to discuss that with me, I'll call that the case of the New York studio trombonist who placed strongly to his left side and possessed short arms. Case number 9. A New York studio arranger who failed completely as a trumpet player after many years of study and lessons. However, after another experience, which was much more gratifying, he returned to his trumpet and really succeeded. I cannot mention this man's name on tape, but this year, 1966, he was given the Oscar in Hollywood for writing the best tune. This fellow came to me in New York, and after checking him over, I found out that after 12 years or 11 years of trumpet lessons and study, he played just a little bit better than a beginner. And this fellow was a master arranger, and he really wanted to play trumpet. So I told him that I would give him my undivided attention for 2 weeks, but that if at the end of 2 weeks we could get nowhere, he would have to give me his hand in a gentleman's agreement to permit me to do what I wanted to do. This he did. Frankly, I was quite sure that at the end of 2 weeks we would not get anywhere. But I did this to satisfy his mind that we were trying. At the end of 2 weeks, I told him, I said, now you're going to get a trombone. He said, a trombone? I came for trumpet lessons. I said, I'm giving you a trombone, and I want you to start on it right now. Now, this was in the morning. I wrote the positions out for him. I said, go and eat lunch. Take an hour and a half if you want to. And don't come back here until you know those positions. Believe it or not, he did just that, and he did know the positions. We started on a trombone, and I think after an hour and a half, after entering the room, he played better trombone than with all his years on trumpet. Psychologically, we had washed the slate clean so that you could talk to him on a basis where his mind could absorb. His subconscious was on the ball, so to speak. But with all the battle scars and premonitions of the past on trumpet, from many teachers' don'ts, and hearing things from unqualified people and so forth, well, the subconscious was so ingrained, so to speak, made teaching him not only difficult, impossible. But by taking on another instrument in the same family, he could convince himself that he could play one instrument, thereby restore his essential confidence. And to make a long story short, I can prove this story, by the way, in 7 weeks. I said 7 weeks, not 7 months. He was to replace a certain well-known trombone player as first trombone in Childs Paramount with Boyd Rayburn in New York. He went along this way for a few months. I said, now you should take up bass trumpet. Well, we didn't know where to get a bass trumpet, and I happened to have one, so I loaned him mine for a while. And after I did, he insisted upon buying it. Well, I didn't want to sell it because I didn't know how to replace it, because it was made for me by hand. Anyway, he talked me out of the bass trumpet. So he played trombone and bass trumpet for the better part of a year. And one day he came in for a lesson, and I told him Next week, you bring in your trumpet. Trumpet, he says, I don't want to see that again. I said, yes, you do. I says, that's the only way you erase the defeat mechanism and return to normal. So he brought in his trumpet, and I'm not exaggerating. In a few weeks, he played fine trumpet because he had proven to himself on the other two instruments that he could produce, that he could play, and that he was accepted, instrumentally speaking, in the profession. Now, that is a case that I think is rather common. One fellow said he had visited 22 teachers before he had came in my direction. And by that time, playing a horn from anywhere from 10 to 19 years in some cases and not getting anywhere, I think they have a right to suspect that something might be out of line. And they should call a little reckoning at this point and leave a little logic and common sense take over rather than their personal pride. Anyway, if you wish to refer to that, you may refer to the person who won the Oscar for a tune who tried to play trumpet and finally did succeed. Case number 10, a type 4 French horn performer. That is one who uses a very low placement on the upper lip and a great deal of lower lip, who possessed virtuoso attributes, who was refused admission to a certain well-known Midwestern college because they said he would not succeed because of his low mouthpiece placement. With this case, the person who had the low mouthpiece placement with the French horn, his teacher happened to write a book regarding his brass wizardry. And he stated and showed you pictures of certain other people who used equally high placements, at least 2/3 in the upper lip, 1/3 in the lower. This poor fellow, so to speak, coming in, had his mouthpiece placed 1/3 in the upper lip and 2/3 in the lower. And believe it or not, that was the reason given for his not getting into college. And this fellow today is one of the finest horn players in the country. And I just mention this as a ridiculous case by people who are so obsessed with an idea that logic passes them by. According to this fellow, anyone who plays a brass instrument using more lower lip than upper, well, he can never make it, so to speak. According to this man's statement, then all the lead trumpet players and all the named bands have been wrong for the last 25 years. Now, all he has to do is look around and not say they're not great players, because some of these players play much greater than he does or ever will. So I don't know what gives a teacher a right to condemn what other people do simply because they do not do that themselves. And then show you pictures of other people the same type. This is why the pivot system offers types, because we do respect the fact that one man's meat is another man's poison, and we do live up to that. So I just mention this as a case of a very bigoted teacher who in some quarters is well known and has caused no end of trouble, because everyone the type mentioned, in other words, the type fours, are excluded in this particular college because he happens to be in charge of auditioning. I won't say any more on the subject. I'm a little bit bitter about it, because this happened to a friend of mine who today is certainly a number one horn player, and he is still under my direction. And the fellow was supposed to fail because he didn't play some mouthpiece the way the old boy did. I have no more to say about that, and then to say that such an evaluation is bigoted and stupid. Case number 11, a case of multiple embouchures in dynamics. This little fellow was a trumpet player in New York. He was a well-known lead trumpet player, but like many other people, he wanted to get his sheepskin for the wall, his diploma, so to speak, and he went to this certain school where they told him that if he would practice softly, he would gain the essential finesse and control. Now, this statement may be true or not true. In his case, it certainly wasn't true. So he showed me in a demonstration. He started making a crescendo from a pianissimo on a third space C. He crescendoed up to about an MF. And at that point, there was a dead spot in dynamics. And then after a break, a momentary break and shift, the middle C suddenly came out with a window crashing thunder. Now, isn't that multiple embouchures in dynamics? He plays one way to play softly, and he plays another way to play lead in the band. Playing softly to some people, unfortunately, means to duck, pinch, drop the horn angle, and hide behind the stand. All of that means they are playing pianissimo, they think. That reminds me like the ostrich hiding his head in the sand so that no one can see him. Pianissimo playing must simply be less of a fortissimo, just less, not something different, not something obtained by gear shifting. So if you think you cannot get multiple embouchures in dynamics, believe me, you can. Now, if his pianissimo control was gained simply by getting lower and less of sound of his fortissimo without an alteration of the jaw or the lip, then I go right along with the statement that pianissimo playing at a certain time in a person's career is vital for his gain of control and finesse. However, if it's the other way around and he's doing something different physically, then it's 100% an untruth. Well, think that one over. Multiple embouchures in dynamics, that's called. Case number 12. A case of multiple embouchures in articulation. In this case, he would slur an arpeggio to a fifth. In other words, from a third space C and trumpet, the E above it and the G above it and back. While he was going, slurring the arpeggio up and down, he would pull the horn angle down and raise his head to go up, reverse the procedure to come down, but then when he tongued the same notes, the horn would stay almost stationary. Well, the almost stationary was correct. But the point is, he had multiple embouchures in articulation. One way to slur, and another position entirely of the jaw and the lip to tongue. Now, the way he tongued, he was correct. The way he slurred, he was incorrect. So that is multiple embouchures in articulation. If you think you have that, run this test on the same breath. Run several arpeggios, slurred up and back, tongued up and back, slurred up and back, tongued up and back, all on the same breath. And look in the mirror. Be sure the position of your head or the angle of your instrument does not change. Like this. Now, another point. Some people use spasmodic thrusts when they tongue. We nicknamed that, if I may be crude, palpitations of the gut, so to speak. They go, that is wrong as well. That's another grave error. Make a good note of that, you people who are writing things down, because those are two major points right there. I don't know if they went over your head or not. Case number 13, a case of multiple embouchures in range. Well, this is really the most common of all. This happens in a lot of cases. after a high C to go the rest of the way, they have to do certain things, so to speak. With the jaw, with the lower lip, with the upper lip, with the mouth corners, with the cheeks, and all. So I assume that that isn't any mystery to anyone. But I want you to make a mental note of this right now. By the cases I've just given you, it is definitely possible to have multiple embouchures in dynamics, multiple embouchures in articulation, and finally, multiple embouchures in range. Range is the most common. They play the low register entirely different than the upper. They drop their jaws, leave their lips fall apart, then get a 2D to go to the high register and find they can't make it unless they have an excuse to take a breath somewhere around the middle E, that is above the third space C, so they have a chance to shift gears. They're not even conscious of it. They just think they're taking a breath, but they're actually doing it for an excuse to alter the jaw position and the lip position. Case number 14. The pedal tone incident on trumpet. Many years ago, back in John Philip Sousa's time, a brass man, I'm not aware whether he was a trumpet or a trombone player. In those days, it was probably cornet and trombone. Discovered that by playing low notes consistently, by exposing the membrane sufficient enough to play the pedal notes, I'm thinking now particularly on trumpet at the moment, and playing them loudly. In other words, building this up until you could actually get these notes with a real fortissimo. That by so doing, in the form of exercises, going down chromatically and sustaining, that this would develop the extreme up register. Certain teachers had this theory. However, it was discovered very soon afterwards that the upper register developed on this basis was extremely short-lived, and it would last momentarily, then it would leave. I heard a teacher of mine say tell of a case that it lasted for a year and a half, or even maybe a little more. But then when it did go, the whole range dropped back to less than normal. The theory, I believe, is to sensitize the exposed membrane to limber it up to such an extent that a tremendous pinching or pucker power is possible to produce the faster tensor vibrations of the extreme upper register. Then in my time, someone on the West Coast, whose name I do not mention, developed this and claimed to be a first. I may say that this has been in the books a long time before he came into the picture. But he wrote exercises down there, and the warm-ups were all down in the pedal register for trumpet, using various approaches from various other registers down to the pedal register, both in the form of slur, all the way up to marcato tuning in the pedal register. I'm speaking now, pedal C and so forth, on the trumpet. The result was the same as it was back in Sousa's time. Produced results, but was very short-lived. A student of mine told me, who followed those principles for a time before he saw me, that he used to play with a band, and its theme song began on an A above high A for screech or first trumpet, or whatever you want to call it. And he said he used to have to run into the dressing room right before that, because if he didn't,
bang on his pedal notes. He couldn't possibly play the A above high A. And this went on for quite a while. One night it ceased to function. And instead of A above high A and C above C and so forth as usual, he had difficulty in getting notes an octave lower than that. In other words, the falsetto, so to speak, of the embouchure had disappeared. And only the real voice was left. In this case, the real embouchure was left. I had one whole band, one whole brass section of a whole band, who adhered to this principle. And suddenly got into a position where so many notes were missed, so many clinkers were played, that four men of the brass section were told to either improve or they would be told to leave. This band was recording a great deal at the time. And almost every recording period was spent making the record over for someone in the brass section. I should say making the tape over. Well, since the union takes over and we get paid by the amount of time, time is a vital factor in recording, same as it is in a lot of other occupations. But anyway, I want to go on record as saying that in all the years I've been teaching, and I can tell you truthfully, it's been over 40 years, I have never seen that teaching approach work for any length of time. Right now, there's a book out in this country preaching this system. Can be had. I think you can look in one of our union papers and see it advertised. He claims that this is very new. Believe me, this gimmick is as old as the hills. The only thing they've done for it is write more exercises than they had before. But the principle is the same. I can tell you my experience with it. I've never seen it last over a period of 2 years. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't people somewhere in this country who made it last longer than that. But if they did, all I say is I would like to meet them. I'd like to talk to them. That's a gimmick. It's very short-lived. It's very short-lived. In other words, a tremendous exposure of the lip membrane to slow pulsating vibrations that are required to play the pedal register. It limbers up the membrane of the lip and muscle to such an extent that it is able to pinch a great deal for those upper notes. I repeat, I have never seen this system work any length of time. Whenever I teach, my thought is, how will a student be 10 years from now? It isn't only teaching for the moment. It isn't only teaching for a flash-in-the-pan result. I'm trying to teach brass players. I'm trying to improve brass players. I'm trying to assist those in trouble. And I'm trying to have those who were unfortunate enough to lose it, so to speak, to get back on the right track. The pivot system was founded simply to free a player of his physical bounds so that he could express himself musically in a relaxed manner. And that is the whole principle behind the pivot system. Well, after hearing all these points, I guess you can see where I got the title. So you think you have a problem. I'm going right on, I hope you enjoy these. I go back and go over them and enjoy them. However, at the time, they weren't funny, lots of them. Quite serious. A case of the constant chin and lip vibrato. This is case number 15. And this player had it so bad that when he opened his case and reached for his horn, his jaw and lips started pulsating. Then after playing, he put the instrument down to talk to me, and he had to wait a moment for the jaw and the lip to start pulsating. Now, as far-fetched as that sounds, I will be perfectly willing to take an oath on it, because I saw it and heard it, and maybe you think there's only one like that. There are many like that. A chin and lip vibrato used by a fine musician certainly can enhance the sound of a brass instrument. However, if the musician is good enough, he can wiggle his toes and it'll sound good, for that matter. My objection isn't that it doesn't sound well. I'm objecting for the same reason I object to a lot of other things. It has telltale effects. The nerves and muscles in the face, twitching and whatnot, become involuntary. And they cannot be controlled after a time. And the player cannot play a straight tone after a time. And he's fired from one band and then another band and can't understand why. I want to mention that specifically. Your chin and lip vibrato become involuntary in many cases, much like the poor shell-shocked victim who came to my studio one day, whose head was bobbing so much he could not place his mouthpiece. I felt so sorry for him, but I had the unpleasant duty of telling him that I would do it my best, but I would guarantee him nothing. A chin and lip vibrato, in most cases, is the one thing I guarantee not to cure. I can mention another thing, that gagging trumpet player earlier in the discussions. I certainly can't cure that, that's a sure thing. I know they've been trying for ages with the search specialists and all to get over that. They've never found a way yet. They said they might have found a drug to control it. But as far as losing it's concerned, I don't think you ever lose it. A chin lip vibrato eventually attacks the high register. One well-known trumpet player in New York City told me that he used to be able to use a chin and lip vibrato up to and including his high G above his high C. And he said he could do it consistently. Now, this is about 10 years later. He says, now he can just about make the high C. From there on, the hand has to take over. I'm not discussing the hand at this point. I naturally prefer the hand, a hand vibrato, because a hand is a voluntary means of performing a vibrato. This is not a vibrato discussion. Don't get me wrong. I just wanted to tell you that I consider that an odd case of a person who opens the instrument case and his jaw and lips start pulsating. He plays, they're still pulsating. Frankly, I didn't know how he even placed the mouthpiece. He puts it down and talks to me, and his lips are still pulsating, so help me. It's true, he was about 37 years old. He said he didn't have it all his life. I found an osteopath, by the way, who worked on him, and he would lose it momentarily, but it would always come back. I guess someday we might find something for people like that. But I want you to know I am violently opposed to a chin a lip or a chin and lip vibrato, because it leaves telltale effects here and there in the chorus to produce an effect. You might say, okay, but as a standard means of vibrato or pulsating, no, don't start it. Never permit yourself to be inoculated with this poison. Case number 16, the choking of the tone with a well-known ballad trumpet player. Well, this one I had to see before I would believe it. This person came from a town in New York State. He would play a ballad, and he used to play ballads. We would say he was a musician's trumpet player, more or less. He played a beautiful ballad. And the kind of player who would satisfy a musician, so to speak. Right in the middle of a phrase, his note would choke off. Well, he told me I was about the 13th or 14th teacher that he had. He could not recall. But he always had the teacher after those beginning instructors for the same reason. That was to find out what's causing the choke. I found out almost immediately that right in the middle of the number, his jaw would jump. Now, oddly enough, he did not use a chin and lip vibrato. I would blame that right away, but that was wrong. He did not use it. And he didn't show any signs of ever using it. He used a beautiful hand vibrato. And believe me, this fellow could sell a song. He had a nerve in his lip. That is, to break it down in as few as possible words, that would jump at the slightest provocation, and the jaw would suddenly go to another position. It was a sharp jump to his left. Now, playing a trumpet and a mouthpiece that small, you can see what would happen if that were to occur on you. To make a long story short, he played that way for years with no degree of success whatsoever. Always this trouble would start. Sometimes, he told me, he would go an entire engagement and it would only start up toward the end of the engagement. Then I sort of relegated it to an endurance problem. But it wasn't that. It's just the fact that he would get his pressure on his lip a certain way and touch off a nerve spasm, and the jaw would jump. He had no control over it at all, except he was so brokenhearted he was ready to sell the instrument. He said he would do anything I told him to do to stop it. Well, that condition with that nerve had gone on so many years. And oddly enough, his mouthpiece was placed way over to one side of his mouth. I found two perfectly good teeth in the center of his mouth with a good resting point on the top and on the bottom, so to speak. In other words, on the upper lip and on the lower lip. If you can call it dead center, I don't use that term because I don't believe anyone places dead center, so to speak. But by relocating the mouthpiece, it no longer touched off that nerve. And the trouble stopped almost immediately. Now, this does not mean that he had to learn to play all over again, so to speak. Because this was not a lip change, even though the mouthpiece was relocated. Now, let me explain that old term, lip change. If a person has a downstream, and I change him to an upstream, or vice versa, that, in my opinion, constitutes a lip change. Believe me, I avoid that like fire. I don't think I've changed one in 5 years, so don't think I'm in the habit of changing lips. My enemies like to twist that story around and say that I do. On the contrary, I do not. I simply try to show you what you have, how to improve on what you have, and unless we had a long talk about it, there certainly would be nothing like a change, so to speak. So don't get that idea in your head at all. But there's a fellow who had to change or sell the instrument. That was certainly enough teachers to find out. Today he's playing, and he's the Secretary of the Union. He operates a large contracting firm, and he plays every weekend all through the year and through the summer. So he's made a great deal, considering the man had so much trouble as he did. I think he has his M.A. in music. I should say Master of Arts. He's a splendid trumpet player, but he had that problem. Well, my business is to eradicate problems, and so that comes under the heading of So You Think You Have Problems. Next, case number 17. The performer who was instructed to use a relaxed left-hand grip on trumpet. This fellow came into my New York studio one day, and he told me he felt that the mouthpiece was all over his face, so to speak. He didn't have the slightest idea where to put the mouthpiece. And it wouldn't have been so bad, but this fellow was a veteran. I found his grip so loose that absolutely no one could play trumpet that way. Now, I'm going to settle this one in very short order. I had him increase the grip on the trumpet so much so that by playing one chorus through, his hand was almost numb. The ridges in the valves casings, I should say, were embedded in his hands. The trouble stopped right then and there. All too